Twitter at PAC Underground. You can download and subscribe to our shows on SoundCloud and iTunes. Thanks everyone for listening, and thanks for supporting KBOO Portland. We'll talk to you next month.
It's 10 o'clock. You're tuned to KBOO Portland. Coming up next, it's Air Cascadia, headlines, interviews, and commentary. And at 10:15, we've got Flashpoints with Dennis Bernstein. At 11 o'clock, a Radio Geekly begins a new series on gaming, board games, card games, RPGs, LARPing, and more. And we thank you, KBOO members, for your generous support. If you're not a current member, you can become one by going to kboo.fm and clicking where it says donate. Thanks for taking care of that. And now we're going to go to Air Cascadia after a couple of announcements.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the Portland Underground Grad School. Classes that begin in April include Talking Across the Political Chasm, Facebook Marketing, Reading Ta-Nehisi Coates, How to Train, Getting Serious About Being a Learning Organization, and more. Portland Underground Grad School is also known as PUGS. Classes take place all over the Portland metro area. Information about registering, teaching classes, and more can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the screening of Food Chains, The Revolution in America's Fields, taking place Friday, April 14th at 7 p.m. at the First Unitarian Church in Portland. Food Chains is a documentary film about the group of Florida farm workers and their Fair Food Program, who partner with growers and retailers to improve working conditions for farm laborers in the United States. Screening will be followed by a panel discussion with Licia Anderson of the Western Farm Workers Association and Ramon Ramirez of PECUN. Again, the screening of Food Chains, The Revolution in America's Fields is taking place Friday, April 14th at 7 p.m. at the First Unitarian Church, 1121 Southwest Main Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
You might win some, but you just lost one. You might win some, but you just lost one. You might win some.
Okay, we're going to go straight to Flashpoints. No Eric Cascadia today, but thanks for hanging with us. KBOO Portland.
Flashpoints. Will Trump go to war in Syria following in the mindless footsteps of the neocons and the permanent warrior Democrats? Also, the Chinese president meets with Trump at Mar-a-Lago. We know they're not playing golf. We'll speak to Public Citizen's Lori Wonk about how Trump's trade policies have unfolded and take a gander at what he might be trying to bargain with the Chinese president. And we'll take a look at how the New York Times bias still is very troubling in Syria, Middle East. They don't seem to always need the facts, do they? I'm Dennis Bernstein. All this straight ahead on Flashpoint. Stay tuned. And you're listening to Flashpoints on Pacifica Radio. My name is Dennis Bernstein. First up, we're going to be talking about Syria. And this is sort of what the press looks like when these are the openings of whatever paper you happen to pick up or whatever service, whatever website. This is from the BBC. This is what they say. Syrian leader Bashar al-Assad should have no role in future Syria, says the U.S. Secretary of State Rex Tillerson. Signaling a shift in U.S. policy, he called for a, quote, political process that would lead to Assad leaving. His remarks follow a suspected chemical attack in Syria, which U.S. President Donald Trump called a disgrace to humanity. He would certainly know a lot about what a disgrace to humanity looks like. The U.S. Says it is mulling over possible actions in Syria, although it is unclear what they might be. That's Trump. Measures reported to be under discussion between the Pentagon and the White House are the grounding of Syrian warplanes and the setting up of safe zones for civilians. Joining us to talk about this and see if we can get a bit of a different angle on it is Jafar Jafari. He is a journalist, news producer at the Lebanese-based Al-Madin TV network. He's based in Washington, D.C., and we are delighted, Jafar Jafari, to have you with us on Flashpoints.
Thank you.
Well,
glad to be here.
Well, it's good to have you with us. All the press, corporate press in the U.S., Europe, this is a foregone conclusion now. The Syrian government is certainly capable of such atrocities. But I think would you say that the reporting is ahead of the facts?
Well, as far as the plan of attack is concerned, I think it's quite safe to assume that there's an internal struggle within the U.S. Government. Specifically speaking, between the White House in particular and the intelligence community, aided by, of course, the hardliners in the Senate and the rest of the U.S. Congress. I'd like to remind your listeners, however, of what Trump exhorted President Obama in 2013. At that point, in August 2013, there was a similar gas attack or chemical attack on a suburb of Damascus. More than 140 people, of course, were unfortunately impacted. Trump at the time exhorted President Obama not to intervene in Syria following a chemical attack. Now, as far as the statement goes, I believe that President Trump is quite different in his take than the rest of the U.S. government. Trump wants to preserve his legacy, if you will, as a strong leader. So he resorted to using hardline rhetoric, yet it's really devoid of any real action. The last couple of days, you know, he's been nonstop talking about Syria and that something should be done. And initially he said President Assad's future, that was only just a few days ago, was up to the Syrian people. And 2 days later, he changed that tone almost 180 degrees to satisfy what we call in Washington the Gang of Eight. And those are the most hardliners on both sides of the aisle in U.S. Congress and the intelligence communities. The Gang of Eight obviously wants to go to war. Trump, in his mind, he has drawn a red line less similar to President Obama's red line. Trump's red line, however, says basically, no matter what happens in Syria, we do not want to clash with Russia or Russian-aided forces in Syria, period. I believe that as far as the next step is concerned, aside the rhetoric, of course, aside, is that we may see some heightened alert in Syria among U.S. troops. That is to say, the U.S. government maintains 4 military bases inside Syria today. The largest of which, along the Euphrates River, in a town called Tabaka, and that particular area is considered to be the breadbasket of Syria, where wheat is grown, and of course cotton are the two most common products, as well as recent discoveries of massive reserves of oil and gas in the same area. So the establishment of that military base was not done haphazardly. In addition to that, the U.S. Most likely will have some form of an arrangement with Russia and by extension with Syria that perhaps in order to save face, let us launch a missile cruise attack on certain targets whereby, you know, we would come out in Washington on the right side saying we did what we needed to do. And that would be the end of it. Now, the other side, of course, wants to go to an all-out war, which did not happen under Obama and Mrs. Clinton at the time. And it's quite unlikely that it might happen now under Trump.
So, well, let's talk a little bit more about the nuts and bolts of the different factions, and maybe you could help us untangle and unpack a little bit of what are the competing groups. I mean, we see that Russia is in there supporting the president, the current president. We hear about various groups being supported by the United States, the good opposition. Tell us, where is this battle now? What does this look like? What is the tug of war happening on the ground?
That's actually an excellent question. Unfortunately, we don't have access to a map of Syria for the listeners to understand what's going on. But basically, you have the Euphrates River in the east, stretching all along the Syrian border with Iraq, as well as Turkey up in the north. And that's where the most fighting is currently taking place, in addition to the collection of fighters who have agreed to leave other areas in Syria, from Damascus, Aleppo, and Hama in the middle, and seek asylum, so to speak, in a town called Idlib. Now, Idlib is a town closest to the Turkish border up in the north. These groups are, there are various groups, various armed groups in Idlib. The strongest group is an extension of Daesh, which is Jabhat al-Nusra. And Jabhat al-Nusra was declared by the United Nations, as well as the United States government, as a terrorist organization. Now, if I may step aside here and talk a little bit about this place, Idlib, and Khan Sheikhoun, where a close by town where the attack took place, the chemical attack. Now, the town is under the control of Jabhat al-Nusra and its supporters. That much has been established. The area that was hit was an armaments depot under the control of Jabhat al-Nusra also. Now, in addition to having said that, irrespective of who fired the first shot at the depot, and we know by now that it was the Syrian government, but irrespective of who would fire the first shot, an arms depot where it should not house chemical agents or chemical weapons.